You mean
So,
later in life, as you grow?
I don't know. What do you think?
Sometimes. Let's take a call. Connie and Eugene, you
Okay.
are on with Rosemary Dunn Dalton. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks very much.
Yes.
I found the conversation very interesting. One of the things I wanted to add is a lot of the venues, at least in my case, that a boy would have had with a father, and fishing, going to sports and all that, I had with my dad. And I found that that was when we talked, because there was no real talking when dad came home and stuff. He worked at a job that left him very tired. And I found as an older child that it was real helpful for me to re-engage my dad, saying when I went on a trip back home, let's go fishing or let's go down to a ball game.
Nice.
And it, during those instances, it was really helpful, and we got to talking. And that was really some of the only times in which we were able to talk one-on-one. And I wondered if she had any thoughts on that.
Oh, I certainly do. And just think of the gifts that you have. I mean,
I was lucky in some way.
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah, and of course, a lot of women have emerged with this story. And interesting how young girls will figure it out. They'll figure out that they're not going to get access to dad unless they go toward him.
Right.
And so, yeah, we've got these wonderful stories of women or girls going on rides in the car with their dad, because that was another thing, you know.
Right.
The car is so revered in our society. And so they figured that out. Well, if I just get in the car with dad, I'll drive and we'll go on errands and so forth, and I'll get him
right.
talking. It's exactly, yes. Well, it's a wonderful little story. And I guess the disadvantage would be for fathers who, like my father, didn't do those things. Yeah, I'm not sure what my father did, actually, other than kind of long for my mom's attention pretty full time.
I think that could be true. One of the things that I also found, that through those actions, especially things like fishing and all that, I learned to be with a man or a male
yes.
in a
yes.
quiet capacity. And even as a young woman, I developed relationships, or friendships, I should say, with boys, hiking.
Oh,
you
good.
Know, it wasn't at all sexual. It was just this is, you know, comfortable doing these sorts of things with boys, you know, around the campfire and hiking and doing that sort of thing. And
yeah.
spending lots of time quiet.
Well, and also a venue, if you think about the hiking, the movement, there's a rhythm to it. You're walking, da, 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 and
right.
it gets people talking, talking, talking. So they'll tell their stories. And little girls, you know, are very probing. they'll get people to tell their stories.
Connie, thank you.
Thank
That's
you.
A very good addition. We're with Rosemary Dunn Dalton at 552-6782. 1-800-838-3760. Rosemary, share another vignette from Lamenting Lost Fathers with us.
Okay, this, I've just opened the book, and there it was this morning. And this is one of my vignettes. And so at this point, it's in the chapter is Father Affection. When I was a young child, the Sunday ritual included a 10 o'clock mass, which two sisters, mother, father, and I attended. Often, I will recall resting my head on Mom's collar, a large squirrely-type fur. Just about at the moment of a sound snooze, Mother would shake her shoulder and off my head would bounce. Next, I would turn to Dad and commence a long series of stroking his curly, red-headed arms, and that would provide my entertainment for less than enthralling duty of church service on Sunday morning. My father was physically accessible, easy to embrace, eager to return a hug. So that was what, you know, he gave. He, in a lot of ways, you know, my father was sort of the man of his times. He was born before the turn of the century, and didn't have a lot of education, had a huge family, 8 kids, and worked really hard, but was, I guess a bone of contention within sort of the mother-in-law, my mom and her mother relationship. And I'm not sure why he never developed hobbies. It was probably because he really was working all the time, and that was sort of his job.
Let's take a call from Care in Eugene. Care, you are on with Rosemary Dunn Dalton. Welcome.
Hi.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I'm very interested in what you're talking about, but I'm feeling left out, and I'm thinking some other people might be feeling left out also from both the assumption you made earlier that girls grow up to have a primary love interest that's male, and I'm a lesbian, and that hasn't been true for me. And the other thing is people, you know, who, like myself, grew up in families where there was divorce, and I didn't have access really to either of my parents. My mom worked. I didn't get to, you know, have a stay-at-home mom that was all nurturing and I got to talk with, and my dad wasn't there at all. So there's more perspectives than what you're talking about. It's kind of foreign to me.
Good point. Yeah, and I think when we talk about a love object, you know, it's kind of a psychological term, and it's very early. It's like early infancy. So when I use that word, I'm meaning the love object of the primary mom and then whoever else is around. And hopefully there's a father. If there isn't, there'll be somebody else. So it's in that context that I use that phrase. And also when I generalize about relationship, it isn't gender specific in terms of future love objects. So the issue of being lesbian identified or same-sex identified is a little different, because usually that will the love object per se will emerge around the time that there's a consciousness around body or sexuality. And for some of us, that's at as early as 3 or 4 years old. And for others, it doesn't happen until teenage, so that we don't realize we have same-sex love, or our sexual orientation isn't heterosexual until we're at that sort of early age. But when we generalize about people loving us or using them as our love objects growing up, it sort of doesn't matter what gender it is or which way we're going. And generally speaking, what we'd like to do, we'd like to think that whoever is around this child is going to be the mechanism by which they are going to grow internal love structures for herself.
What about daughters who don't have, really don't have an adult male figure or a steady one in their lives?
Well, you know, really women play a double role. I mean, they certainly are raising kids without men around. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know, some of this involves some bias. I've gone through different stages around this, because as a single parent myself, you know, I raised my kids. Their father was involved, but I got to a certain point with my son where definitely the father was absolutely important. And I couldn't, when he was about 19, I couldn't really do what the father does. But he chose other male objects too, as well as his father. I mean, he had coaches and so forth that he bonded with. And I think that's true of daughters. Hmm. I think daughters will seek out.
They will find some.
Yeah. And also, when we think about the variation of gender right now, it's so powerful to have gender and transgender folks emerging. Because what we really, when we try to generalize, make sex-identified generalizations, what we're really finding is there's all of it is in all of us. So I might have gone fishing with my daughter, mm-hmm. which I did. And so some of the generalizations, we're just trying to grab some language here and use it and make it work. Care, I have lesbians, of course, in my book, too.
Care, thank you for calling. This is Steve in Talent. Steve, you're on with Rosemary Dunn Dalton. Welcome.
Hi, Rosemary. Thank you for your work.
Oh, thanks.
And good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
I just, as a man, I'm just like filled with compassion for women now. I raised three daughters, and I just feel as men we need to be more compassionate. I heard the other day that even the word woman is man with a womb, and the word female is male with a fetus. So even in the language, it seems American society is stacked against the woman, and we just need to be more loving. And I feel we're evolving towards all loving each other unconditionally.
Hmm. That's
the good news.
That's very sweet to hear. That's very good. Well, I can tell you've done some personal work. I mean, that's
I've done a lot of inner work recently, and I know you have too. And so keep doing what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you,
thanks,
Steve. Another Steve. Steve in Jacksonville. You're on with Rosemary Dunn-Dalton. Welcome.
Yeah, hi, Rosemary. I do appreciate your work. And Jeff, I do appreciate your work too, because I'm indirectly involved. But that's
thank you.
This is a personal question. I deal with a lot of men who are in their 50s and 60s who have had relationships, good relationships with their daughters, one or two daughters. And then all of a sudden the daughters, and I have one who's 33, gets married and can disappear.
Yeah.
Is this a phenomenon that you see between the father and the daughter? When
is that a literal disappearance or a kind of emotional disappearance?
It's an emotional disappearance, not a literal disappearance.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, as she was talking about earlier, there are even an actual disappearance, a physical disappearance, because of the distance that we live here and they live 700 miles away, that type of thing, too.
Right.
But it's more an emotional disappearance because you can make phone calls, emails, and all the rest of it. But this is a phenomenon I'm finding is not so unusual in what the male thinks is a healthy relationship to the child, the female child. So can you comment on this?
Sure can. Gosh. And I pick up the longing. Talk about longing for the daughter, longing for the father.
Well, I'm not throwing in divorce into this. Divorce would probably complicate the issue too much.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, I hear that there's a longing that happens for the daughter when she leaves and she's gone and she disappears.
Absolutely.
She likes bonding with this other guy.
This jerk.
And, who's not good enough, of course.
Right.
And she'll find out. But, you know, I guess we get to, like, developmental stages in relationship then. That's kind of the early developmental stage for her. She's going to do this task. She's all involved. So then she may have children, may not. She may continue developing professionally. But the primary relationship takes up a lot of time. But guess what? She comes back.
I think so.
Oh, yes, she comes back, definitely. And we don't want her to wait too long because daughters always come back when fathers look like they're getting older, may die. There's that moment of, oh, my God, I got this business I've got to take care of. But it would be great if she came back before that.
Can Steve have any influence on that, accelerating that?
Yes, absolutely. Continuing talking to her about, I miss you. I'm sorry we can't talk like we used to. Don't worry about it. I'm here. And if she has children, everything that gets, you know, we hear all these grandpa stories. Grandpas are very different than fathers were. So if, you know, often grandpas will turn into available, emotionally available, present, physically present, wanting more and more involvement with their grandchildren. Just very playful. I mean, they've got time. They finally have got some time. If they'll let themselves go there. So, I mean, all of that's ahead of you, I'm thinking, as you're talking. But, gosh, wouldn't you just make sure you had a visit with her? Wouldn't you do that? Mm. Set that trip up a couple times a year, no matter what?
Well, let me throw one at you.
Yeah.
What happens if they cut off the visit?
She's got something on her mind. And there's a secret. We don't know what it is. Maybe she's working through issues she has with you and she needs time out.
Well, I hear this from several men. I mean, it's not me personally.
Yeah, well, maybe that's right. She's got something on her mind. She's mad at Dad. Mm-hmm. Okay? Or she's with somebody who won't, quote, allow her to have a dual relationship.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
And, boy, that's, and of course, you know, here we go again because, you know, that's power and control. That may be somebody who's controlling her. And I think, really, we still don't understand what happens to women when they start getting controlled by men.
Mm-hmm.
The early stages are they really don't understand what's happening, and for sure it's going to change. And because it's just, I just don't know what this is about. That takes a few years to figure it out. And the middle stage is, well, if I just do this, and this, I'll change it. It will change. I can make this happen. And then the last stage is complete control of her. And you know what? She's lost herself. And I think we really don't understand what happens when people are controlled by others, when children, when adult women in particular, stop believing the things they used to believe, or when they no longer know who they are because they've been put down for so long, told they are not what, you know, they are not worthy, they're worthless for so long, they stop and they stay. And until that little click comes and she liberates herself with a lot of help, hopefully.
Well, yeah, that's a very good analysis, but let me, one more quick one.
Yeah.
Let me throw one to you. How about this same woman? It could be very successful in the
in the
outside world, you know, could be making a lot of money, could be a professional, could be all this, but at the same time has this this divergence and dichotomy between the thinking of her and a relationship with her father's.
Right. Steve, thank you. We're going to have to
end it real close.
You know, we're down to our last minute, Rosemary. I wonder if there's anything generally you can say to women who feel that, whose fathers are gone, who feel they just didn't get closure. There's just so much they would have liked to have said and didn't. And
or the father that won't let her have closure.
Right, whatever, however it happened. Yeah. But their perception of a bunch of unfinished business. Is there anything generally you could say to women in that situation?
Well, you know, whenever we look at our lives and we go back, we have to sort of be prepared for that because it brings up a lot of feeling, brings up a lot of loss and sadness, brings up some joy too. But I always ask women to bring in, men also, to bring in their pictures, their photographs, so they can look back at what happened. And often they'll find, oh, my gosh, my father was actually holding me. For the first 6 years of my life, I held my dad's hand. I didn't know that. There's a message there. The message is indirect, and she can figure it out because it's her experience. And, you know, or there'll be a more direct message. But I really suggest going back, get the pictures out, take a look, and march through time with him, and say goodbye.
Rosemary Dunn Dalton's been our guest. Her book is Lamenting Lost Fathers. And Rosemary will be reading and meeting people to talk about her book at Bloomsbury Books in Ashland next Thursday, September 9th at 7:30 p.m. Rosemary, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. This has been great.
Next is Here and Now.